Welcome to Curmudgeon's Corner for Monday, February 18th, 2013. I'm Sam Mentory. Von Bo is here once again.
Yo.
So we've got an exciting show once again.
Exciting.
It's required to say that.
I mean, we're tingling.
Maybe you're tingling.
Okay, maybe I am. But maybe I'm not. But anyway.
Anyway, plan. Since our last show, a number of things have come up. Last show, we talked a lot about this Tesla test drive. And there's been a lot of back and forth since then. And we're going to talk about that because it puts a lot of things into question. But let's the rest of the plan. The Pope resigned, like, right after we recorded the show, essentially.
If anybody hasn't tracked this, usually popes die. They don't resign.
Yes,
okay?
Yes.
I mean, the only pope. The last one was 600 years ago. Yes, so, yes, yes.
There,
big news.
There were two others, I believe. But, yes, anyway, moving on our schedule, Yvonne, like, hacked his Apple TV and wants to talk about it. And then, finally... we'll probably take it through here. We had the whole Russian meteorite thing happen. Now, you guys may notice there are some other things that went on. There was a State of the Union. There was a North Korea test thing. And, Marco Rubio responded to the State of the Union. But I think Yvonne and I agree we have a little bit less to talk about on those things. So we're not even going to bother unless we run out of stuff to talk about and still have time.
Right.
Yeah. So let's get started on Tesla. So we talked last week about this test drive that some guy at the New York Times, and John Broder from the New York Times, did of the Tesla that was like a disaster. And Yvonne and I spent like 15 minutes laughing about it and how he ran out of power and how the battery was running down in the cold and all this kind of stuff. Well, the CEO of Tesla posted a response.
He basically was none too amused.
He was none too amused, but he revealed something, which is that ever since... they apparently had a bad experience with a review on Top Gear a few years ago. They automatically turn on all the diagnostic recording stuff in the car when they give it to journalists to test drive.
And by the way, I saw that review of Top Gear. Okay. Review of Top Gear. Let me tell you something. The review of Top Gear was not bad. They liked the car, by the way.
They just made fun of it at the end with the little thing.
Exactly. They made fun of it at the end because the reality is, Top Gear is not really, truly, really a factual show. All right. They try to make fun. They fake certain of the stuff. Okay. If people know that. And so they've been making fun of electric cars and the fact they run out of electricity and you got to push them. If you're nowhere near a station, that's it. So.
Anyway, the point is, forget about the Top Gear thing. The point is they turned on all the data logging and the CEO basically posted a long rebuttal that the key part of it is he posted all kinds of graphs and charts basically showing that the guy doing the New York Times review was at best sloppy with the facts and at worst outright lying about what happened on his test drive. Is that about right?
Yep, that's what it seemed like.
You know, there are all kinds of things like, you know, the guy said he drove really slowly at 45 miles an hour to maximize the thing, and he never went under 50. He said he fully charged it, and he charged it to, you know, less than full, stopping it a couple times. The last time, charging it only to like 20-something% or something, and, you know, and stopping it specifically while it still said it had less range than where he wanted to go. He said he turned down the heater so that it would be like really cold because they said to do that to maximize it. It shows he never turned it like it was at 72 almost the whole time, etc. All this kind of stuff. So what do you think of all this when you digest it? And then apparently he posted the guy at the New York Times posted a response to this, but I haven't read that yet.
Oh, you haven't read that?
I've only read the Tesla response. I have not yet read the broader response to the Tesla response.
Look, I think that it may be that the reporter, as reporters in my experience usually are, it may have been a little bit sloppy with some of the facts. But I still, the reality is, the point of the main point of the article probably is still true. the distance that you get and range that you get to make a long-term trip with an electric car is, you know, it's not great. Charging the vehicle, doesn't matter whether you have a fast charging station, is a pain in the ass. And the other part is that the range, I think, in the cold is not as good as probably with the batteries as it is under warmer conditions. And the other part is the car is not plugged at night. It still does discharge. Mm-hmm. I don't think that those, you know, those things are still materially different in my perspective. So I don't know. I mean, yeah, this guy probably gets a number of the details factually inaccurate. I mean, let's face it. I mean, you know, I don't know. You're going on a road trip. You're taking notes and remembering what you're doing, what you're not doing, whatever, whatnot, and so forth and so on. I'm like, I mean, this guy, I mean, I'm sorry, but I mean, if you know, it's a lot different. You have an electronic log of every little item that you did. I mean, I don't know. I don't know. And I didn't look at the log specifically. I mean, you know, is it my thing is, I mean, I read a little bit of it and I didn't go and look at any of those charts. My question is it one thing that he's saying that he, you know, he said, well, I, you know, was driving at 45 miles an hour and I'm like, or slow. I mean, is it just that he was egregiously just driving that much faster, or is it just that occasionally he was going over and not following exactly?
No, no. When he said he drove 45 miles an hour, during that time period, he never fell below 50 and was going around 53 most of the time.
Well,
I mean, 53 is still slow.
Yeah, 53 is still slow, but my question about that is,
and also,
let's face it, I have seen, for example, my speedometer in my car. I go through radar guns a couple of times, and my speedometer reads one speed. And the car's actually going about 3 to 4 miles an hour off of that speed.
That is certainly possible because the speedometers, the way the speedometers work in cars, that's, you know, if the tire is inflated a little bit differently, blah, because it's based on how many times the wheel turns, right?
Right. Yeah.
You know, and so, you know, depending on the tires you have on it, the degree of inflation, all kinds of other effects can get you a couple miles per hour off, potentially. But this is enough different, and I'll tell you one thing that says that, for instance, another period where he said he had his cruise control set at 54 miles per hour, it mm-hmm. shows it almost exactly pegged at 60, which means he really set the cruise control at 60.
60, not 54.
Not 54. Now, I can understand that, too. Like, hey, if maybe the speed limit was 55 where he was driving, and so he just didn't want to put that in print.
Yeah, but still, anyway, we're talking about factually about a vehicle. I mean, that's just not...
not cool. And also, right. You know, he says he never pushed it. You know, he was always driving normally. It shows that he peaked out over 80 miles an hour. You know.
But for how long?
Oh, just a short period, like a minute or something. But like...
Well, I mean, it was over a 300-plus mile drive, you did 1 minute over 80. I mean, come on. Really? I mean, that is only 1 minute.
Look, but the point is, though, like, and if you look at the charts, he's got them very annotated about, you know, specific things in the chart. It's if you're writing an article like this, you want to be as close as factual as possible. And, like, yeah, I can understand when it's a couple miles per hour off. But the way that he wrote the article was very much saying, I did these extreme things, I was very careful, I was blah, blah, blah. And the logs show he didn't really do that. He did drive slower the time he said he drove 45 miles per hour than the other time. But, you know, it's not a consistent, you know, there's time after time after time, it looks like it was very sloppy. Now,
I'm looking at the chart. He says, for example, okay, by the way, Broder said, I limped along at about 45 miles an hour.
Yeah.
At about. So he was doing a little around 50. Now,
53, you know, or so, yeah.
53. I mean, you know what? The other part is, now, I will say this. The one where he said cruise control that he set at 54 miles an hour, and he was really doing... 60. It looks like for an extended period of time, 60. Now, that's off, okay? Now, I am looking... Look, there is one blip, which may have been him passing a car at 80.
Uh-huh.
Okay, now, come on. That's just... You know, there's like two of those over a distance of 550 miles. I mean, come on. Seriously? You're going to take it that he was pushing the car
It wasn't that he was pushing the car. It was that he specifically he stated that he was very carefully staying within the limits in order.
I'm going to say that over 550 miles, if you did like two bursts of like what appeared to be like 2 minutes at that he burst at that speed, I don't think that that's. I don't know. So, I don't know. I think, you know what?
So, and then let me do his responses, because I think it's important to say. He responded in an article that says that that Tesla data, what it says and what it doesn't, John Broder, February 14th. And like I said, I haven't read this article in full. I've been skimming it while we've been talking about it. But he lays out some of these claims. For instance, Mr. Musk from Tesla said, as the state of charge log shows, the Model S battery never ran out of energy at any time, including when he called the flatbed truck. He responds, the car's display screen said that it was shutting down, and it did. The car did not have enough power to move or enough to release the electronically operated parking brake. The tow truck driver was on the phone with Tesla's service manager for 15 to 20 minutes. So, you know, then...
Well, I'm looking at a place here where it's saying, I mean, it did run out. After Norwich, I mean, it's here at flat zero. Yeah, it says range zero.
I see that too. And then it, like, yeah, anyway. And then things like the final leg of the trip was 61, and yet he disconnected the charge cable when the range display stated 32. He did so expressly against the advice of Tesla in an obvious violation of common sense. The Tesla personnel who I consulted over the phone told me to leave it connected for an hour, and after that, the lost range would be restored. I did not ignore their advice. You know, in the article, the Broder claims that the car fell short of its projected range on the final leg. He bizarrely states that the screen showed estimated range 32 and the car traveled 51, contradicting his own statement. He says this was in a caption. It was not in the article itself. What he referred to, and admittedly could have been more precise, was that the car fell short of the 90-mile projected range it showed before he parked it overnight.
Right, because that was the part. I mean, that was like that, and I understood that myself.
Yes.
He parked a car overnight, it read that it had 90 miles of range. When he left in the morning, it had dropped to like 30 something. Okay. I mean, and he was like, whoa. I'm like, let's face it, that's one of the big impacts of this. I mean, you drive in a car and it's got 90 miles of range in a gasoline car. What, you parked it? When you wake up in the morning, all of a sudden, it doesn't show 30.
Right.
Okay. I mean, that's just the reality. It doesn't just show 30.
He also mentions the cruise control issue. Cruise control, I'm skipping a couple of these, but cruise control was never set at 54 as claimed, nor did he limp along at 45. He drove at speeds from 65 to 81 for a majority of the trip and an average cabin temperature of 72. He says he drove normally at the speed limit or with prevailing traffic when I thought it was prudent to do so. He recalled setting the cruise control to about 54 miles per hour. The log shows the car traveled about 60 for a 100-mile stretch on the New York Turnpike. I cannot account for discrepancy, nor for a later stretch in Connecticut where I recall driving around 45. It may have been the result of a car delivered with 19-inch wheels and all-season tires, not the specified 21-inch wheels and summer tires. That just may have affected recorded speed range and battery depletion and any number of other parameters. Tesla's data suggests I was doing slightly more than 50 over a stretch where the speed limit was 65. The traffic was heavy in that part of Connecticut, so cruise control was not usable.
And by the way, and that really goes back to what I was saying about indicated speed versus recorded speed.
Yes,
because,
it does. And he says cruise control was not usable. He tried to keep the speed at 50 or below. So again, it comes back to, he said 45. He might have been exaggerating slightly. He was trying to keep it slow. He was significantly slower than traffic. And it sounds like, you know, he was like, I was 40, limping along at 45. That seems like an exaggerated turn of phrase. He was going slowly and limping along. He wasn't really going 45.
Right. But still, I mean, he definitely probably had, you're talking about 19 to 21 inch wheels. I mean, that's a huge variation.
Yes. So then he mentions the temperature. He claims to have turned the temperature down, but in fact, he turns the temperature up. He says he raised and lowered the cabin heat in an effort to strike a balance between saving energy and staying comfortable. It was 30 degrees outside. Tesla jumped to the conclusion that I claimed to have lowered the temperature at 182 miles, but I never wrote that. The data clearly indicates that he sharply lowered the temperature setting twice, a little over 200 miles into the trip, and the graphs do show that. After the battery was charged, I tried to warm the cabin, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. He basically goes and rebuts what the Tesla guy said point by point. And so, you know, I can see both sides defending themselves. To me, what this looks like fairly clearly, and you stated it very early on, this is a reporter being slightly sloppy with the facts and doing a little bit of exaggeration to try to make his point. They also mentioned the guy went back and forth in a parking lot trying to run it out of charge. And for like 5 minutes, and claiming that the Tesla report said, you know, that was like he was obviously trying to make it run out. He says, I was driving around the service plaza in the dark looking for the charger, which is not prominently marked.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he was trying to, yeah, he was purposely trying to freaking like drive and like just get stranded in the middle of freaking nowhere and freeze his ass off.
Well, it was a service plaza, but yes.
Well, yeah, but you know.
Anyway, but the point is, I think this is fairly easily explained. The reporter was a little sloppy with the facts. He exaggerated a little bit to make it a better story. And, you know, he wasn't necessarily expecting to be confronted with electronic logs.
Right.
And apparently, and I have not read all the back and forth on this, but there's been a lot of back and forth on sort of the car blogs versus the electronics blogs versus whatever about, like, you know, is it okay to record the reviewers like this? And where the people on gadget and electronic blogs are like, of course it is. And we're used to it. Like, anytime they give us a loaner gadget, they're logging all kinds of crap about how we use it. And meanwhile, the car folks are like, we're used to being left alone. We don't expect them to be watching every detail of what we do when we're reviewing the car.
Right. I happen to agree. I mean, it's quite unsettling, to be honest with you. And then the thing is, to be confronted with the data like that, especially when you weren't really there. I mean, you know,
My take on this comes down to, I think it's perfectly reasonable to log all this stuff, but it should be disclosed.
Right.
You should be like, here's your loaner car.
Here's your loaner car. We will log everything that you're doing. Yeah, just so you know.
It's standard policy on loaner cars for reviews. It all gets logged. So if there's any problem that you have, we can diagnose and figure out what's going on.
Right.
Boom. You tell them up front, and then there you go.
That's it. But I think that most of the stuff,
maybe if he'd known that was the case, he would have been a little careful with.
Well, he would have been more careful with taking notes, or probably maybe, for example, because, well, if you want to question like the speeds or whatever, I mean, snap a couple of pictures of the speedometer so you can see like what we're talking about, stuff like whatever, just so you see what extras are being done or something.
Right. And also for this kind of logging, by the way, throw a GPS in the damn thing.
Sure.
That's a much more reliable gauge of speed, position, track, all that crap.
Well, I am going to guess, by the way, just so you know, that I think that the actual tracking information of the speed where the discrepancy is going, that the computer's taking was from the GPS and not from the speedometer.
Oh, you think the speedometer was showing the wrong number, and so he thought he was at a different speed than he was, but the logs are actually correct.
Oh, I am pretty sure that is true.
Right. So you think his speedometer was showing less than what he was really going?
Correct.
Okay. You know, if you're going to design a speedometer that has a potential error, you design it to show the other way. You should have it showing faster than you really are.
I will tell you, my speedometer shows less. Right. Actually, mine shows more. Other cars have shown less.
Okay, because that's what you want. Like, right, if your speedometer is going to be wrong, you'd rather it show you a lower speed than you're really going.
My car shows, usually over-indicates by between 3 to 4 miles an hour. Okay, which is a lot. Mm-hmm. Okay, by the way. And my wife's car under-indicates by about 2.
Nice. See, and I like, you know, I pay attention to the speed on the GPS. You know, because I don't know. I next time I'm in my car, I'll take a look and compare my own.
Actually, the main way that I know, I go through a place that actually has a radar gun that flashes like the speed every time I drive through. Oh, well,
See, that's not necessarily reliable too, because those have a plus or minus like 5 mile an hour problem.
But that one's pretty consistent. I mean, you know what?
Consistent does not equal accurate.
Well, consistent does not equal accurate.
Consistent represents precision, not accuracy.
But I validated with something else. What the heck?
Well, whatever.
I think I had a portable GPS or something or whatever that one day I validated that was pretty good.
I mean, all of these measurement devices, even the GPS, have sources of error in them. But of all of those, I would trust the GPS the most.
Yes, I do agree. The GPS is usually the most accurate. Yep.
Anyway, so
the
one conclusion I want to put here, by the way, is regardless of the details of the dispute here, the fundamental point that you and I, Yvonne, talked about last week, which is that, you know, hey, the technology in electric cars has come a long way, but the most fitting use case is still local commuting, where you come home and you plug it in every night.
That's right.
If you are going to be doing road trips with these damn things, you have to think about it.
Oh, yeah.
You have to plan ahead a lot more than if you're just hopping in the car with your thing. And that'll undoubtedly become less and less so over the next few years. But right now, it's still the case. If you have an electric car and you're going to drive cross country with it, you better be thinking about where you're going to stop and charge and how you're going to stop and charge and how long you're going to stop and charge.
Agreed.
And that's the fundamental point. I think this reporter probably tried to sensationalize it a little bit too much and, you know, got in trouble for some sloppy recording of his facts. But, I mean, the bottom line is he had a bad experience and he wrote about it. And, you know, the facts that the Tesla guy posted point to a little bit of an exaggeration, not something fundamentally wrong.
Correct.
Although he seems like he was intentionally stupid in a couple areas where, like, the guy...
That may have been.
The engineers told him to charge it for an hour. He charged it for an hour, looked at the thing, and it still didn't have enough miles. So instead of saying, oh, I guess I need to charge it longer, he said, okay, I'll take off.
Well, but the engineers tell you over the phone to charge it an hour. I mean, they freaking built the damn car.
I know, but you still, like, if it was a gas car...
Well, but you're familiar with gas. I mean, what the heck do you know? If it's the first electric car that I took and I'm talking to the factory and the engineers telling me on the phone, I'll do this, it'll work.
I would be on the phone and say, you know, it still says 30 miles and I got 80 miles to go. Are you sure this is okay?
Right. Well, yeah, I may have done that too, but, you know, the hindsight's 20/20 too.
Yeah. Okay, let's take a break and what's next? Pope?
Yeah, let's pope it up.
Okay, we'll be right back after this. And we're back.
We're back.
You know,
and we're bad.
It's all this fake excitement. We're back.
Yes!
Anyway,
Daddy. Okay, we're not very good at this.
Whatever. You know, so like you were saying, the Pope resigned.
Weird thing, I gotta say. You know, I mean, let's face it. 600 years of this shit, but, you know, without one of these guys resigning.
And 600 years since the last one, but like you were saying, I believe it's happened twice before, and that's over... What,
1,000 years?
2,000.
2,000 years.
2,000 years, roughly speaking.
Yeah. I mean, Well, I think it talks a lot about the crisis that I think that the Catholic Church is undergoing at overall.
Well, but let me say that this Pope has telegraphed this for quite some time. He'd written about over the last few years while he was a Pope, and apparently even before he was Pope, he had written things about how, yes, Popes can resign. And in fact, he had written that he thought Popes had the obligation to resign if they were no longer able to carry out their duties effectively. And some people speculate that this is almost in direct reaction to what happened with Pope John Paul II, who was sick and in ill health and very weak for the last several years that he was Pope before he died.
I get that. But yet, at the same time, it's just, look, these guys went and elected this old buzzard in the first place in order to freaking lead the Catholic Church.
Well, and there was speculation at the time. I believe, were you and I on the air when this happened? Because I remember talking to you about it.
Did we?
I think it was before this show started.
It was
8 years ago, right?
Was it?
And we've been doing this show for like six, so maybe we haven't talked about it. I don't know.
Wait, hold on. I'm checking. I'm looking. Benedict Arnold.
No, wrong Benedict.
Oh, sorry. He began before that. I think we did talk about the Pope, but we talked about some of the idiotic stuff that he'd done.
Maybe. So anyway, but like when he came on board, yeah, there was a lot of talk about how they had intentionally picked someone who is relatively older because they didn't want to do what happened with John Paul II, which was they picked a relatively young guy, and he was like Pope for almost 25 years.
Well, that may be true, but yet at the same time, you picked a guy who freaking like, I mean, he was a freaking curmudgeon. I mean, this guy, I mean, if you look at all the scandals that have happened over the last, you know, the sexual abuse scandals, the there was a financial scandals, well, hell, this guy that went and stole all his freaking notes and like published them in a book. I mean, it just seems like, you know, there seems to be a lot of conflict, okay? And this guy was not able to deal with it. They put a guy who was way too damn old to deal with all the shit that that the church had to deal with at this point. And the guy was basically, for a lot of the stuff, buried his head in the sand. I mean, think about this. I'm looking at it. He's 85 years old right now, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you pick the guy to lead the church into the future in 2005 who was freaking, what, 78? Are you fucking kidding me? I mean, it was just, I mean, remember when they announced them, I was like, but me personally, you know, having been raised Catholic, I thought, is this some kind of a fucking joke?
Well, and the thing is, you got to remember that the people who pick him are the cardinals who were picked by the previous popes, and most of them are also in the mold. Like, you know, they mentioned every single cardinal who is going to pick the next pope was picked either by John Paul II or by Benedict, and they are both highly conservative in their viewpoints of the role of the church.
Well,
and so you're quite likely to get more of the same again, because the only way you get the sort of the sudden reforms out of this kind of structure are if they pick somebody thinking he'll be a nice, you know, conservative type, and then he surprises them. You know,
that may be it. I mean, I guess, but it's just, I don't know, you know,
and Benedict was specifically John Paul's sort of enforcer of ideology, you know? So, I mean, I guess we'll see, we'll have the excitement of the whole thing with the white and black smoke, in a couple weeks, but,
I just, you know, it just seems, you know, the,
oh, and I should disclose, by the way, Yvonne's sort of a lapsed Catholic. I am not religious at all. My mother is a Protestant minister, so I have, like, no real knowledge of what the Catholic faith is other than what I see externally, and every once in a while there's a pope.
Well, the thing is that, let me just look. My experience with the Catholic faith, you know, since a childhood, has been a church that basically you've got a whole bunch of people at the top talking a whole bunch of bullshit that even like the priests, or the people that are ordained underneath it for the, ignore a lot of the shit. Mm. Okay, because it's just not realistic. Okay. And, you know,
and by the way, I will say, you know, you're coming from sort of the American Catholic tradition there. From what I have read, and again, this is external, this varies a lot by part of the world. What you're describing correct. Is very true here, somewhat true in Europe. But once you start going into Africa or Latin America, there's a little bit of a different.
Well, yes, because if you go, I mean, I happen to be or at Asia, a Catholic school, my high school, that was run by, an order that almost all of them were from the United States. They were not Puerto Ricans.
Right.
So if I went to a church, say, like where my grandmother used to go to church, I remember that I went for a service for I can't remember what, like in the last year or two. I think it was like somebody's – I think it was probably for a funeral, I'm going to say. It had to be. I went to the church for the service. Oh, I remember it's like 3 years ago where my grandmother is from, okay, from the town that we're from. I went to the service at the church, and I mean I heard the sermon, and I was like, what the hell is this, 1922? I mean I was like, what the hell is this guy talking about? I mean it was like the most out of touch freaking sermon – I had ever heard in my life. And I'm sitting there and I'm like going, what the, this guy, this is a joke. Okay. I mean, are you looking at what the hell's going on around you? I don't know. It's like, has this guy ever turned on a TV? Hmm. You know, that's the kind of leadership that you've got in a lot of places. And that's what you hear. And I'm like, they were wondering, well, why the hell are so many people tuning the church out?
Well, and this is the fundamental tension of all of these things. It's sort of keeping up the old order and the tradition versus, I mean, and this is, you know, where theoretically, like a lot of this stuff is sort of, I shouldn't even say sort of, is the divine word of God. And so therefore infallible and unchangeable versus, you know, a dynamic that recognizes over time that what people consider good and evil changes dynamically over time, and things that were like anathema a couple generations ago are widely accepted today. Well, and that you sort of the world changes, and if you want to stay relevant, you have to some degree change with it. Versus the notion of, well, if the world changes, they're all going to hell. At least we'll be right.
Listen, let me put it to you this way: how bad things are. I have a friend of mine from Mexico, okay, who, you know, recently, like a couple of years ago, married a guy who was a priest who left the priesthood to get married because he said, I can't take this anymore. Mm. Okay, all right? And he was a young guy, okay, in his early 30s, okay? He'd become an ordained priest and just said, I can't do this. Okay, I can't. I just can't keep with this church. I have another guy I know who was also a priest, who was my brother-in-law's cousin, who was a very famous priest, by the way. This was in the news. Actually, this was in the national news. He had a television show. His name is Father Alberto, okay, who was in Miami, priest down on Miami Beach, who apparently, I don't know, he just couldn't stay celibate, was dating, started dating somebody, and decided to quit the church and marry her after they exposed it that he was not staying celibate, okay? And now he joined the Episcopalian church. So, I mean, I keep seeing priests drop out, I mean, which you didn't see. I keep seeing this stuff. I just think, you know, the scandals don't stop. They don't recognize the serious issue they've got with, like, I mean, all the sex abuse cases. They keep hiding them under – trying to hide them all under the rug. I mean, so many things. It's just – I don't know. I mean, honestly, what – I mean, and these cardinals are probably going to elect some kind of – some other fucking asshole, okay, to lead the church, you know, and it's just –
Well, and who knows? They could surprise us. There are always questions when people put out these lists of potential popes. They always do, like, you know, a few of your standard or old guard Europeans, and then they throw in, like, there's a guy in Canada who's on the list.
There's some people in Africa. I'm not holding my breath.
Yeah, because this is one of the things that's interesting, too. Like, in most of, you know, sort of what's considered the Western world, the Catholic Church has been rapidly declining.
Oh, yeah.
However, in most of the quote-unquote developing world, it's actually been growing quite nicely. So the overall demographics of the church are starting to be far more third world than they are, you know, certainly European. I mean, the decline in Europe's been even faster than the decline in the U.S.
Oh, yeah, big time.
You know, and so the fact that it's sort of based out of Italy, or, you know, the Vatican, is somewhat of an anachronism. That's not where the sort of dynamic life of the Catholic Church is right now.
No.
But what you get is the folks who are out in the third world part are sometimes even more conservative and dogmatic on some of these issues than the, you know, the traditional sort of European popes. So,
well, I gotta tell you something. I'm not holding my breath. Let's just put it to you that way. Who they're gonna pick?
You don't think they're gonna pick someone who's gonna be young and revitalize the church and excite everybody?
No, and I will tell you that even some, you know, you talked about some of the people, especially, look, I know, for example, I've met a lot of the priests that are like the progressives and like some of the people that wanted to make changes. Those came for a lot from Latin America, Brazil, and some other places where there has been also a pretty rapid decline of the Catholic Church in those countries. But I don't think they're going to pick anybody like that. They're not that. They're just going to pick another fucking old white fart. They're kind of like they're going to look like the fucking Republican Party.
There you go. It wasn't on our agenda, by the way, but there was another interesting article this week that I'll try to pull up the link during the next break, but about why the Republicans have found themselves the party of old white people and why it's going to stay that way.
Well, I don't know if it's the one that was in the New York Times Magazine.
Probably.
Yeah, I read that one today. It's pretty good. But you
okay,
know.
Here was. Original Sin, Why the GOP Is and Will Continue to Be the Party of White People by Sam Tannenhaus, and it was actually in the New Republic.
Oh, no, okay. So there was a different one in the New York Times about that, as a New York Times Magazine as well. Can't remember the title, but...
Any more to say about the Pope, or should we take a break and move on?
Let's break it up.
Okay, we're going to take a break. We'll undoubtedly talk about the Pope stuff again when...
When they have the white smoke.
When they have the white smoke. One other thing. There was at least some speculation that I saw that there was...
I was going to be elected Pope?
I'm, you know, based on the last few minutes, I'm sure that's the plan.
Yeah, sure.
There was some speculation that it wasn't just he's feeling old and female and doesn't want to do it again, but that, you know, all these various scandals are going to hit this fan and he's getting out while the getting's good.
I think that may be a big thing of it, too.
My response to that was actually, you know, if you're really afraid of the shit hitting the fan, wouldn't it be better for yourself personally to still be Pope when it happened? Because there's all kinds of immunities and stuff that come with that. Whereas if he's, like, no longer Pope, they could theoretically go after him for some stuff.
I don't know. Really? Is that... I don't know.
I don't think they would. Like, his plan is to live in a monastery in the Vatican...
Right.
And go quiet.
He's 85 years old, for God's sake.
And the thing is, look, who's going to go after him? Italy does not have jurisdiction on anything. It's all about the Vatican. So the only way something would happen there is if the next pope decided to. And you know there's no way in fuck that's going to happen.
No, there's no fucking way.
So I don't see any... I mean, maybe there's these various scandals swirling, whatever. I think you can probably take him at his word, and he's old, he's feeling old, he's tired, he doesn't want to do this shit anymore, and so he's going to go off and die.
Yeah, well, that didn't sound that...
Well, you know.
I know we all do, okay, but, you know, that wasn't very...
But, I mean, he stated his plan is basically, you are not going to see him again, ever. He's going to go into a life of isolation, so...
Well, okay. Well, you know, I don't wish anybody ill, so even though he's a dumb fuck, I wish him all the best.
Yep. Okay, we'll be back after... and I'm not wishing that he's going to die either. I'm just, you know, he's 85.
Well, he is.
He's 80,
he is going to die. Like,
he's 85 and he's sick. It's probably not going to be another 20 years for him.
Probably
you know?
Not. Probably
could
not.
Be. Could be. You never know.
You never know, but I said probably not.
Yeah. Okay, we'll be back after this, and we'll talk about Yvonne hacking his Apple TV. Okay, we'll be back after this exciting... No, it's... it. Who am I kidding? It's not going to be exciting, but we'll be back after this.
Ready for the test, Dracula?
I'm ready, Frankenstein. Then, let us begin.
Creepy Classic celebrates the classic horror and science fiction films from the silent era through the 1960s, and retro TV horror from the 1950s to the 1970s. Visit creepyclassics.com for all your classic video needs. And when you buy something, tell Ron that the curmudgeons say hello.
And here we are. So, Yvonne. You like hacked your Apple. Now, first of all, let me state this. You have an older Apple TV. It's not like the current model, right?
Yes, let me explain. Okay, I have an original Apple TV, okay? Now,
so how many years old is that thing at this point?
So it's got to be, I was looking at that, 5 years old, okay, at this point.
You
all
know,
right?
They're $99, Yvonne. Why don't you just upgrade to the new one?
There is one reason why I preferred the old Apple TV.
It stores things locally. It's not just streaming.
Exactly. Yeah. That was the main reason. Okay, so...
because I'll tell you, I have the current one. I guess they did a silent update of some internal components, but I've got the current one, and I bought it like almost a year ago now. I've been very happy with it. I love the thing.
Listen, I like the way that my old Apple TV worked, okay? Now, there was one reason... Okay, let me... look, there's a couple of... Number one, Apple has not released any software updates for this device in a long time, and they're not going to. Okay, number one. So I've known that. One of the things that was annoying me was that the fact that the AirPlay, okay,
yeah,
was not supported on that Apple TV.
Oh, okay. We use that all the time.
Well, now, granted, you got to remember that because all the content is on the device, it's a little bit redundant, but not totally. Because the thing is that I could, like, for example, I wanted to be able to, like, play, say, instead of using the YouTube browser on it, I wanted to be used a YouTube on my phone. To share a video, or if I saw or anything, okay, because you could do it using the hack, okay.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, like I mentioned, I use it all the time. I used it earlier today. So from the Apple TV itself, the current version of the software, you can stream things. You can stream things from online services like Apple and Netflix directly, but you can also look at what you have shared on your computers. You can play your videos, your music, your whatever from there.
Right.
Or I can be sitting on my phone, bring up what I want on the local stuff on my phone.
And then share it.
And just throw the output to the Apple TV.
That's right.
Also, you can actually share the screen.
Right.
To your Apple TV. So, like, on a fairly, not every day, but several times over maybe once or twice a month, we'll be doing something on one of our computers or my iPad or phone. And be like, and I want to talk about it to the people, other people in the room, my family. And instead of having them all like gather around, I just throw it up on the damn screen.
Right. So that wasn't available. So, and I knew there was no update forthcoming with it. So I saw that the upgrade did allow you to do that. And it added some other stuff. Like for example, it said about surfing the web, that I could surf the web with it. Add more apps. It lists a whole bunch of apps. I really didn't understand what most of them did, other than it would allow you to connect the hard drive and play other types of video formats, MP4, whatever, So anyway, bottom line is, I said, well, screw it. I'm gonna do it. Can I please mention? Okay. Pain in my ass.
Before you get there, I'll say we've had this conversation before where both you and I used to fairly frequently do things like install betas.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And if there was an interesting hack, we'd install it and try it out and blah, blah, blah. For the last few years, every time you and I have talked about it, we've both sort of agreed, we don't have time for that shit anymore.
We don't have time, and I haven't had time for this shit. Now, the thing is that I was, like, thinking, damn it, you know, like, I don't want to buy a new one, like, right now. And I'm like, yeah, you know, I do like this one, so I figured, let me just try to install this. Maybe it'll work better. What a fucking pain in my ass, okay? It said in the thing that the installation's easy, simple, and whatever. Bullshit, okay? All right? Well,
let's say there's a difference, by the way, of what easy simple means for
like a hack versus
something built in for Apple.
Correct, right, yes. I didn't have to code it, yes. All I did was I downloaded it. By the way, I'm not going to promote the product, okay, because I don't want to give them any fucking thing. By the way, Macworld had rated it at 4.5 mice, okay? It says, whatever the fuck product definitely turns the Apple TV into a powerful streaming multimedia center for your living room, okay? That's what it's... All right.
And this was a recent review of it for your old hardware?
Yes. Okay. Because they've also got a hack for the new ones as well. Okay. All right. So they have one for both. So I tried this damn thing. Okay. I go and install it. You know, it downloaded an installer. I put it on a flash drive. I stick the flash drive into the back of the Apple TV. I unplug it. You plug it back in. It did launch an installer. Boom. And then what it done, it says, turn it, you know, pull out the USB drive, shut it off, and turn it back on, and it should be done. So then, you know what? The thing is slow. It gets crashy. I'm just like right now at a point, I'm like, did it add a couple of cool things? Yeah. But really, do I like to have an error codec that you are sending to the TV cannot be reproduced? I mean, no. I'm like looking at this. This is what drives me crazy. All these fucking people talk about, oh, I want to get an Android phone. Oh, because you can hack it. You can do this and that. Really? I had not done this for a while, specifically because I had avoided this. And today I did this, and now I realize what a bunch of fools you are. Really? Is this the shit you want to be dealing with? Unsupported codec. Cannot handle this. Random errors. Bullshit, sluggish, slow. I'm telling you something. I'm like, fuck. I'm just like, you know, look. By the way, I had to pay for it. All right. Uh-huh. It was not free. Okay. Honestly, I should have just gone over to the fucking Apple store and just bought a new fucking Apple TV.
And you would have gotten this particular functionality you were looking for without all the other shit.
Correct.
And I think, you know, this has been my attitude for a while. I added all kinds of hacks to my system.
Oh my god! I remember my two computers I had in my 90s. I put in brand new processors. I mean, I ripped out the motherboard, put new shit in there. I put tweaks. I disassembled. I assembled. I did crap. I mean, oh my god, the kind of shit I did. I overclocked the processor. Did all this crap. And I still remember one thing that I do recall was. I mean, I had this one machine that. Oh my god, after I did some of that shit, oh my god, talk about crashing every 2 fucking minutes. Well, listen, after many, many weeks of me tweaking and whining and doing shit, yes, I got it to work right. But my god, was it a pain in my ass.
Well, yeah, and like, you know, I'm noticing I actually have a couple of like extensions on my Mac right now that like, you know, add like system stats in the menu bar and some other stuff. And I'm like thinking about like, maybe I should get rid of some of that shit. Cause my computer like acts up all the times and I just want to clean it up and get it closer to a stock Mac. And you know, I was talking about getting the new computer, which I've kind of held off on, but I'm wavering on that. Cause this computer does suck. But like, but my thought at this point is I'm going stock. Like what the new thing that comes, I'm not changing a damn fucking thing unless I absolutely have to, you know? And for a lot of these reasons, it's like, it's not that I absolutely have to. It's like, but I'm not going to mess with things just to mess with things. I'm not going to add.
Let me give you the one super annoying aspect. It talked about the web browsing, right? Which I thought, oh, it sounds cool, right? So it installs like Firefox, right? And it supposedly installed Flash Player. Okay.
Oh God.
Well, all right, let me talk about these two things. The Flash Player thing, I tried to use the browser. It fucking keeps telling me that my Flash Player is too old. Okay? Fuck. Then Firefox. Dude, the thing crashed in in 10, 20 minutes of using it, it crashed 7 times. And I'm like, really? Really? And you advertise this damn thing and say, oh yeah, you can surf the web. Really? What a load of shit. So, you know what? The moral of the story is, if you want crashy, buggy bullshit that you hack with and whatever, then jailbreak your phone. Go spend all these hours. Fucking get a fucking Android phone. Go and try to install Blue Cream Ice Cream Sandwich 7-point fucking bullshit and try to grab all these apps for the non-authorized store in the beta form that then don't fucking work, and then you're trying to fucking figure out how to reboot and reinstall your damn phone. You know what? It's a waste of fucking time. What a load of shit.
Now, I will say that the experiences differ depending on which thing you're doing and what, where, and I mean, and some people have had really good experiences with these, but you always end, like, what happens the next time there's an update from Apple?
Right. Well, of course,
you've got an old one that's not probably not going to happen, but like if you jailbreak your iPhone, you have to think about these things, you have to worry about them, and you have to, when an update comes out, you're like, can I upgrade yet? If I upgrade, my jailbreak's gone, and blah, 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 blah. You know, look, yeah, you're right. It's just, at the very least, if you're going to do any of this stuff, know what the hell you're getting into. Know what the trade-offs are. Know if you're willing to, if it's worth it to you, and if you're willing to spend the time to figure out stuff. And maybe it's really smooth for your particular use case. I don't know, but like, my thought on all of these things at this point is like, you know, I don't have enough minutes in the day. You know, out of the box, the damn thing works really well. It does a lot of shit. And if there are things that I really wish it would do that it doesn't do right now, hell, there's a 50-50 chance they'll add it in the next update. I can wait.
This crap is for the people that have way too much fucking time in their hands. That's all I'm saying.
There you go. Okay, well, anything else, Yvonne? If not, let's take a break.
Let's take a break.
Okay, we'll be right back after this to talk about the meteorite over Russia. Very exciting.
Meteor! Meteor! Meteor!
AfricaFocus.org features high-quality analysis and progressive advocacy on African issues with a particular attention to priority issues affecting the entire continent. The heart of the website is the Africa Focus Bulletin. Other features include regularly updated Africa-related news feeds and a set of country pages with extensive background and links on each African country. If you follow African issues or are even curious, visit AfricaFocus.org today.
And here we are. So there's some very exciting YouTube video of a meteorite hitting over Russia. It's big, it's bright, it flies through the sky, and then you hear sonic booms, and then
a lot of light. To be honest with you, I gotta give at least kudos to the guys that made that movie, like Armageddon or one of these, like whatever those in the 90s. Like
the movie.
It really looked a lot like what the fucking movie.
There you go. But, you know, and look, it broke a lot of windows, set off some car alarms. A lot of people injured, mostly by falling glass and stuff like that.
Yes.
Nobody killed. But, you know, it's got everybody talking about asteroids and, you know, damage they can do again and stuff like that. This is apparently the biggest one that has been detected hitting the Earth since the Tunguska meteor hit Russia in 1908. So almost 100 years. There is that caveat detected because it is quite possible that some this size or bigger hit in an unpopulated
like the Pacific
area.
Ocean or something.
In the middle of the ocean, in the middle of the Sahara, whatever, you know, places like that where they could have hit and nobody would have known the difference. Now, with modern technology, like as of today, like, even if it hadn't hit directly in a populated area,
we would have known about it.
There are numerous detectors and signs of various stuff that would have been lit up. Not necessarily to give advance notice. Nothing gave advance notice of this, but we would have detected the impact.
And I understood that one of the reasons, well, number one, it came from the side that was from the sun, number one, which caused that basically it was literally impossible to see because of the light. So that's number one. And I guess because of the size as well, that had an influence on whether you could, you know, we could track it or not.
Yeah, and I one graph that I've been very interested in, and I've not seen anybody produce yet. And I was thinking of, like, you know, tossing off an email to one of the astronomer bloggers or something asking about this. But the graph I want to see is size of object versus the current minimum advance notice given our existing technology. So, like, for instance, obviously, this thing they say was probably about 10 meters wide or something like that. Obviously, 10 meters, the warning time before it hits the ground is something like 30 seconds. Okay? That when you see it in the air, you'll know about it. And frankly, if it had gone over the ocean, we might not have known about it until after it hit. So at 10 meters, the minimum warning is zero. Okay? Or even negative. But obviously, I hope, obviously, let's say the other extreme, if there was an object the size of Mars coming to
hit
the Earth.
Well, we probably could see it. Well, if it's the size of Mars and it was coming even still from the side where the sun is, I think the big eclipse in the middle of the day,
there wouldn't be a really big eclipse until it was right on top of you. But, well, like, yeah, but I imagine,
not right on top of you. What are you talking about? Listen, the moon is like how many million miles away?
Well, right on top of you by cosmic terms is like, I mean, that's right on top of you. The moon is right on top of us.
Well, yeah, but okay. The moon could cause an eclipse, and it's a lot smaller than Mars.
Let me put it this way. If something the size of Mars was even remotely close to the distance that the moon is from us, we'd be in deep shit, okay? It would be too late, okay? My point was, an object the size of Mars, I hope to hell
we
could detect it prior to 30 seconds before it hit.
Well, okay? Didn't I understand that they were able to track,
even if it was coming directly at us from the sun, you know?
I thought that it said that NASA had tracked, like, what was the percentage of the objects, like, over a certain size?
Like 95 or something, which of course means that 5%, 1 out of 20, we have no fucking clue.
So, okay, aside from how cool it was to actually see this, and thankfully nobody got hurt seriously over this whole thing. I mean, there's all these people talking about whether we should really spend money on, you know, more money on tracking these fuckers, or we should just, you know,
we're gonna get killed. We've talked about this argument before. I think this is we're not talking about huge amounts of money here. It's worth it.
I agree. I mean, we should probably spend, I mean, I would be okay on a planetary scale if we spent $3 billion a year on this.
I think the amounts that are being talked about are significantly less than that.
But say, I mean, look, come on. We're talking about the whole fucking planet. Hey, have the Chinese toss in $1 billion. We'll toss in $1 billion. Have the Europeans toss in a couple of billion. I mean, come on.
And at this point, by the way, we're only talking about detection and setting up more to understand what's out there, what's a threat, what's not a threat, is there anything that's coming at us? And, you know, even like you can imagine, I mean, this did enough damage in the small town that it hit. You know, if this thing hit Manhattan, this would be a big fucking deal.
Yes, it would have been.
You know? And this is exactly the kind of thing during the Cold War, by the way, that they were afraid, like, if something like this hit, it could be mistaken from as an attack.
A nuclear attack.
And you know, it could set off a war. But I think we're talking chump change in terms of the money to actually just throw a few more dedicated telescopes to this purpose, maybe a satellite or two, and the salaries of a few scientists to work on it full time. You could get a lot more bang for your buck here. Now, there are some videos you can find on YouTube of sort of the number of catalog near-Earth objects. I remember seeing a time lapse, like, sometime in the last couple years, that showed sort of an overhead view of the solar system with dots where all the known objects were that were potentially in Earth-crossing orbits or whatever. Mm-hmm. And it started out with almost nothing. And then as the time moved forward, like, they just kept popping up faster and faster and faster until in the present day, it was absolutely chock full of these things flying all over the place. And so, you know, there's tons out there. Now, am I, you know, and you know, they've done the sort of statistical thing. These things do happen. The ones this size, you know, we've had two in the last 100 years. There may have been some more that were undetected. So there's probably, odds are good that one of these hits the Earth, like, you know, every 30, 40 years. And, you know, the bigger sizes that could, like, you know, take out a city, probably less frequent than that. We may even be talking once every 1,000 or 10,000 years. But, you know, it's a really significant cost if it does happen. And it's a really, really tiny cost to spend more time and effort on detection so we know about these things. And you don't even have to talk about technology for diverting these things, although there's ongoing research about that kind of thing as well. If you at least know about it, if you knew about it a year or two in advance, you could spend a lot of resources trying to nail down exactly where it's going to hit, evacuate the area, you know? And like I said, there is active research on diverting these things too. There are a number of things that might not be that bad either.
I saw a couple of things. I mean, one of them involved launching SAM into space. Yeah. A couple of others involved lasers and other neat stuff. Like one of them, I thought it was like you could point a laser at the damn thing and it would just nudge it away or something. Or you could like put a rocket on it and it would nudge it the other way.
Some are like paint the damn thing. Like change its color, it'll be affected differently by the sun, and it'll move. You know,
right. Yeah.
And all of these things, all of these preventative things, rely on knowing about it years in advance.
Correct.
And in order to plan and do these things, and like I said, if it's obviously if it's one that's going to like destroy cities or a continent or the whole planet, you want to move the thing and make it not hit. If it's a small one like what hit Russia, maybe you just say, okay, we'll have a few people, you know, drive a few hours out of the way for a few days.
Yeah, that would be, yeah, you know, we'll send them on a little vacation.
Yeah, there you go. So anyway, I think this is, I mean, it was nice and spectacular to watch. I watched the videos and I was like, oh, whoa, look at that.
I know the video. You gotta admit, the one thing that I liked about the Russians, I don't know, you saw all these dash cam videos.
Yep.
And I didn't realize, I don't know if you saw that the reason why there were so many dash cams.
Yeah.
Is because apparently over in Russia, like people get into a lot of accidents and apparently it's not very easy to ascertain like
who's guilty.
And so, therefore, everybody's got a fucking dash cam, so that way they could just say, hey, you know what?
That's pretty cool. It makes me want a dash cam.
I know. I thought about it, too,
yeah, because if you remember that plane that crashed in Russia a few weeks back, there was also dash cam video of that plane crashing.
Yep.
So, cool stuff, but, I don't know. I had something I was going to say, but I completely lost it when you started talking dash cams. Oh, well.
The dash cams are cool.
Dash cams are cool.
I gotta admit, I was like, all of a sudden, really? And they say that apparently almost every new car, like, you know, a decent car or above in Russia, has a dash cam.
So let me ask you this one hypothetical before we wrap it up, and we'll wrap it up in a few seconds because we're over an hour now.
Right.
Let's say that it was discovered that there was an object heading towards Earth that was big enough that it would cause a worldwide cataclysm. Mm. Like, no one would survive. We're done. We're going the way of the dinosaur.
Mm.
And they knew that there was absolutely nothing that could be done about it. Period. End of story.
Mm.
And it's 2 years in the future.
2 years.
Do you want to know? Or would you rather find out the moment it hits and you're done?
If there is nothing I can do?
Absolutely nothing that anybody can do.
Gosh, that's a tough one. Gosh, you threw me for a loop. I'm going to choose to know.
You would want to know?
Yeah. I'm going to choose to know. Because you're going to wind up, if you know that's it, you're going to wind up doing a whole bunch of things different.
Yeah.
You know?
But on the other hand, would you spend, how much of those last 2 years would you just spend kicking back and doing fun things or doing the things on your bucket list versus how much of those last two years would you spend worrying about the fact how much time you had left?
I'm going to spend probably going through the whole fucking bucket list.
And I guess, you know, this isn't so much.
Look, my priority will probably be to try to spend as much enjoyable time with my family as possible.
There you go. And,
look, and my friends. I'll try to split it up, but that's going to be like that would be my priority.
And you know, I pose this as a hypothetical, but people find out they have terminal illnesses every day.
Yeah, they do.
And this is essentially the same scenario. The only difference here is you can't tell some people and not others if you're actually going to destroy the whole world. Because if anybody knows, everybody's going to end up knowing. It's not like you can put yourself in a bubble and isolate yourself from that news.
Oh, boy.
You know, so...
Yeah, I mean, it's tough. I mean, if I could know and probably not try to tell everybody, I would do that. It's kind of difficult.
So if you were president, would you order that we not disclose the news?
And there's nothing we can do, huh?
Nothing we can do.
Jeez. I don't know. Fuck.
let's hope we don't have to
figure that out
anytime soon.
Right. Okay.
Anyway, I honestly have no idea what I would do. I think I might not want to know if it was just me. I'm not sure about that, though. I'd have to think about that a bit more. If I was president, I really don't fucking know, because you'd have to weigh the whole thing about, like,
civil disobedience.
If everybody in the country decided to say fuck it, quit their jobs, and go have fun for the next 2 years, the next 2 years aren't going to be that much fun.
No, they're not.
You know, and but on the other hand, I would know the reality is it's going to leak. There's no way in hell you can keep that a secret. And so you might as well get out in front of it.
Or you tell people, but you lie. You say, yeah, we're working on it.
Yeah.
Right.
I think there have been novels that are based on that plot. Anyway, that's a show. We're out of here. No sequester, no State of the Union. Sorry if you missed those topics. We'll undoubtedly talk about the sequester sometime before it's supposed to hit at the end of the month. Yeah. Anyway, that's it. As usual, email me at abelsmay@abelsmay.com with any questions, comments, thoughts, all that lovely stuff. And have a good week. Tell your friends. Enjoy. See ya. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Adios.